Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
And welcome back to the First Cut Podcast here on CBS Sports. That Sean Martin, PGAtour.com from inside the belly of the beast at the mothership. Sean, thank you so much for jumping in. Like for the first show of the week, we had to rip Kyle away from his vacation. He didn't even tell his family. He was sneaking away to record a podcast, but that's because of his love of Matthew Wolf. Thank you so much for stepping in here on the First Cut Podcast.
Yeah, so I thought he was kidding when he said he didn't tell his wife he was doing that pod, but then we have a little text between ourselves and our wives so that our wives can commiserate, I guess, having golf-obsessed husbands.
Sure.
And I put that quote in there saying I enjoyed it, and he's like, hey, thanks for selling me out. And I'm like, well, if you put it on a publicly available podcast, I've got to think that that it's, you know, fair game. Your wife probably actually knows, but she in fact did not know that he was podcasting on their family vacation.
Yeah, he really doesn't appreciate how callous she probably is to the fact, to all of the content that comes from Kyle Porter.
Yeah, I was surprised because I told him my wife listens to all my podcasts because that's probably the most she hears my voice all week.
Oh, sad. Well, much love.
Not true.
Much love to all the extended family of the First Cut Podcast. We appreciate your listenings and your subscriptions. All right. I mean, so you were, were you working on Sunday, or was this just your own labor of love to just help be telling the story of Matthew Wolf? Because it truly is, with this win, it is the Sean Martin bump, right? Like, you write the big, he's turning pro, here's the deal, and then he comes back and now makes you look like a genius sports writer.
Yeah, so I've been telling people I was supposed to be at the 3M Open, but I begged off. I was like, you know, it's been a long year, I've got two kids at home, about to leave for the Open, is there any way I could miss it? And so then, of course, you know, my boss is kind enough to find a fill-in, but of course then all that happens and I'm regretting it and wish I had gone. But it was a great tournament, super fun. It's so cool to have young players who get in the mix quickly. And really, the Matthew Wolf thing goes back pretty far for me, just because I worked in the cart barn at Westlake in high school for a few years. And when I was there, I was in the cart barn picking the range balls in the cage cart. People were aiming at me and hitting me. And then Chris Como, who worked with Tiger Woods for a while and is still a top teacher in the game, he was working in the pro shop, and George Gankus was caddying a little bit at local courses, playing a little pro golf and just starting to give lessons. So, and Westlake, of course, now is Gankus still teaches there. And that's where Wolf does his practicing when he's home. That's where all those Instagram videos you see were filmed. So it's been really cool. I mean, it's a 5,000 yard golf course. The range is artificial mats, striped range balls. It's like, it's as public as it gets. And it's now this place where, you know, George Gankus is running a really successful teaching operation out of. You know, Matthew Wolf, obviously, is his big star. But if you look deep enough, there's videos of Dustin Johnson hitting balls there because kind of the Gankuses are friends with the Gretzkys. And that Padraig Harrington's taken lessons there from George. And so it's just it's crazy that a little place like that has gotten some decent pub in the golf world.
I mean, Westlake, Texas, to me, is high school
California.
Football. Okay. Westlake, California.
Yeah.
So you've got it all the way back. All right. So do you take in the idea that this is just like the beginning of a new coaching tree, as Kyle called it?
I think one of the great quotes I got in that Matthew Wolf story was from Charles Howell, because, you know, Howell can relate, like Wolf. He came out as a highly touted star. You know, Wolf turned pro after winning the NCAAs by 5. Howell turned pro after winning the NCAAs by 8. And Howell, as many people know, has seen most of the big name instructors. He's not afraid to try something new, and he's always looking for a new answer. And so he's a guy who's well-versed to speak on instruction. And he kind of said that he feels like now with, you know, the things that we have to measure things, whether it be TrackMan or FlightScope or pressure plates, you know, we have all this stuff, all this these ways to measure and get new data on what the body is doing in the golf swing, that now instead of worrying about what it looks like, you're just worried about it producing kind of the right numbers, whether it be launch monitor readings or, you know, how your weight is shifting and those kinds of things. And so it's less about aesthetics. It's more about just results. And Matthew Wolf is just the perfect example of that. It's obviously not a golf swing that you would teach per se, but it gets the results.
What's, I mean, is, I can't imagine that on the most simplistic level, swing your swing, it always has been a part of teaching golf to, you know, anyone throughout the history of the sport. Not the swing has evolved over time. You know, is there any resistance to that kind of teaching?
You know, I don't think so. I think because, you know, the other thing Charles said is we have more smart people than ever that are into coaching. And obviously some people get kind of scared off when, you know, you start talking about biomechanics and, you know, launch monitor readings and physics and all this stuff that they fear you can kind of get into that paralysis by analysis. And they probably look at, like, you know, DJ and Brooks, and they're like, look, they just, you know, they're athletes. But those guys themselves might not be looking at it, but their coaches definitely are. And there's just, I don't think so. I think people know now that you need to be well-versed in that stuff. You're at a disadvantage if you're not using it, because it allows you to measure things that never could be measured before. And so I think the golf swing happens so fast, and there's so many things that you can't see with the naked eye, that if you're not using this stuff to really find out what's happening in the golf swing, you're at a disadvantage. And, you know, like any information, it's how you use it. So it, not only is it knowing how to capture the information, but it's also that need to know what to do with it. And there's more and more people that I think know what to do with that information.
I don't know what to do with Matthew Wolf, right? Like we just, you have, you take this, and I think that where we left it is that it might just be, you know, like a sink or swim type thing, that you would expect Matthew Wolf that when it's on, it's going to be on, but that he will sometimes miss a cut, as he did at the Rocket Mortgage right before this absolutely explosive, dramatic, theatrical win. Like, that's like the, it's fun because you have the history from Westlake, California, that Kyle has the Oklahoma State connection. It feels like the three of us and this group has all been in on Matthew Wolf. Now, as I'm having, and as we are having to describe him to other people, you know, how do you put it in reference for what we should actually expect from the golf?
I think the most important thing, and he kind of mentioned it, is the job security of the two-year exemption. Because, you know, if you don't have that, you're a couple bad weeks from, you know, going down to the Corn Ferry Tour, or, you know, if you miss a Q school. And so I think that's the biggest thing, is now with a two-year exemption, he has the comfort of knowing that if he has a couple bad weeks, he doesn't have to worry about it per se. There's no greater, you know, ramifications than, hey, I just had a few bad weeks. And so the stress level is so much lower now, because you're not worried about, you know, going down to a lower level. You know where you're going to be the next 2 years. And that just makes life so much easier for a young player. And I don't think that can be understated, because so many of these guys, you know, they're living year to year, and they have stressful weeks where they've got to get the job done, or else they're going back to the Corn Ferry Tour or going back to Q school, those kinds of things. So I think that's going to be the biggest thing for his development. There's parts of his game that still need to develop. You know, I talked to Aaron Oberholzer, who, he played on tour, won on tour. He was a top 25 player in the world before injuries. And he did NCAAs for the Golf Channel. He said, you know, Matthew has physical skills that you really just can't teach. But like a lot of young players who come out on tour, he's got to work on his wedge game and really refine that. But you know what? Tiger Woods had to work on his wedge game when he first came out. He had trouble with distance control. Dustin Johnson, we've talked so much about how he improved his wedge game the last few years. And so Matthew has this foundation of, he's a great player who obviously is capable of winning on the PGA Tour, and now he just needs to refine some skills, especially kind of that wedge play. But he has the freedom to do that and work on that, because he doesn't have to worry about keeping his card.
All right, so what about his playing partner on Sunday, you know, who had his own chance to force a playoff and maybe be able to have this career-changing moment? Your boy Colin Morikawa. So
yeah,
like that's, so the pressure's on for him here starting this week at the John Deere and for the rest of the way to try to also be able to attain that kind of job security.
Yeah, but that's, I mean, he did not seem like a guy who was worried about stress. I mean, that's the most impressive part. I mean, with Matthew Wolf, when you're hitting at 330, 340, that makes the game a lot easier. Colin Morikawa's not doing that, but he's been flagging his iron. It's really incredible iron play. I looked it up. If he had enough rounds to qualify for the stats, and obviously it's a small sample because he only played four rounds as a pro, he would rank second on tour in strokes gained approach. I think he'd be seventh in strokes gained total, which just is how much you're beating the field by each round. And at the 3M last week, his strokes gained approach was the fourth best performance of the season. So it's just been a really incredible showing. I mean, both Wolf and Morikawa, they were 1-2 in strokes gained approach. They contended, you know, Wolf wins, Morikawa almost does, with basically just slightly above average putting weeks. They didn't putt their brains out to win. They just did it with strong ball striking. And really, it's, you know, you see guys get hot putters and they come and go, but really with Morikawa, it's been just this very consistent ball striking. And when people I've talked to about him, they say, I mean, that's just who he is. He's the kind of guy who, like, his missed tee shots, like, end up in the first cut, no pun intended, for the podcast
Thank
he doesn't
you.
Have big misses. His misses are very slightly offline. And they said, you know, his junior year of college, he averaged 68.6 strokes. His senior year of college, which he just finished, he averaged 69.0 strokes. And then as a pro, he's averaged 68.6 strokes again. So basically, over the last 2.5 years, he shot the same score every round, no matter where he's playing, which is incredible.
Do you think that consistency, like, what kind of odds or how do you foresee the rest of his season playing out in terms of trying to pick up sponsors exemptions, trying to get as many FedEx Cup points or, you know, golf dollars as you need to be able to have that kind of job security?
Yeah, luckily he's secure for the Korn Ferry Finals. He's already got that all locked up. So worst case scenario, he goes to those. And then really there, you just need one good finish to get your PGA Tour card for next year. So I think there's a pretty good chance that we're going to see Colin Morikawa on tour next year, one way or the other. And, you know, it's crazy, though. There's really only, because he's not in the Open, he's not in the WGC the week after, it's only the Deer and then the Wyndham are the only two, like, full 500-point FedEx Cup events left for him to play before the Korn Ferry Finals. So there's really not many opportunities left for him to try to get that card through the non-member FedEx Cup points. But, I mean, the way he's played, I would really like his chances in the Korn Ferry Finals to get a tour card, and then we would see him in October or September at the Safeway Open playing as a tour member.
When we've got star players at the collegiate level, do you is there something either to be said in the analysis based on what you've seen that to, you know, everyone comes out at different times. Like, let's compare it to college basketball, I guess. But when you have a player like Matthew Wolf who leaves after his sophomore season, you know, star-studded all the way through, but then, you know, Morikawa on the other end is coming out after his senior year, is there, like, growth and development? Is there any kind of, like, in the NBA, you're drafting it as a prospect, right? Like, you're not expecting the 20-year-old to be the 20-year-old forever. You're expecting that player to be, you know, like a 24- and 25-year-old. 22-year-old who's a four-year player, you know, then they kind of are what they are. Do you have a sense of if there is significant growth and development in a college golfer's game between those sophomore and senior seasons?
I think a lot of guys, they go into school for the most part thinking they're going to go 4 years, but there is a sense of striking while the iron is hot. So, you know, Victor Hovland turns pro after this year was over because, you know, he'd won the U.S. Amateur, he played well in a couple majors, and so it was time to go. I mean, his stock was high. Morikawa had done some really good stuff as a college player, but there wasn't a time where people were just clamoring for Colin Morikawa to turn pro. And I think, you know, because he's not that physically dominant player like Matthew Wolf, he knows he needs to keep refining things and getting things a little bit tighter and a little bit tighter. And honestly, it's smart because now you're spending 4 years in the comfort of your college environment where your coach is making your travel plans. And you know what? If you shoot 75, it's not that big a deal. You just go back to campus. You're a college student with no worries in the world, and you can work on your game kind of without that stress. Whereas if you go pro, as you know, after your sophomore year, let's say, and you don't have a huge, you know, endorsement deal like Matthew Wolf signed, then you've got that pressure of, you know, you're trying to keep your card, trying to get through Q school, trying to get onto Korn Ferry or Canada or one of the other tours. And so I think for Colin, because he didn't have that big breakthrough moment like Matthew Wolf did last season or Victor Hovland did with the U.S. Amateur, it's it's like, why not just stay in school for 4 years? I can keep getting better in a low stress environment. And then that way I know I'll be ready when it's time to turn pro.
Coming up on the other side, going to get some early Open Championship thoughts from Sean and our perfect finish for the John Deere next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
And now it's time for our perfect finish brought to you by Amstel Light. It's got the perfect finish, it's got the perfect balance, and it's exactly what you want after any golf round. Sean, I suggest to you that a perfect finish at the John Deere would be Colin Morikawa winning and securing his place on the PGA Tour for the next 2 years.
It would be crazy. I mean, I think I saw somewhere Victor Hovland was the betting favorite. I mean, the guy's not even a tour member, but I mean, he's finished 12th, 13th, one bad week at the Travelers, I think, and then 13th again at the 3M. I mean, the guy's top 15 in three of his last four professional starts, so there's no reason not to think that. And, you know, you do have to wonder how Wolf and Morikawa are going to fare this week, just after, A, playing a ton of golf in a condensed time period, and then B, you know, for Wolf, there probably is a little bit of a letdown of like, all right, I can relax, take a breath, I can kind of, you know, let my hair down a little bit because everything is secure and locked up. And for Colin, I think it's so stressful being in contention, especially when the stakes are so high for a guy with no tour status, that, you know, it's understandable if there's some sort of just kind of let down or kind of, you know, it's hard to get the adrenaline going again or some exhaustion, that kind of thing. So I think in some sense, Hovland might be best off of all of them just because he's had some really good finishes, but he hasn't necessarily had that stress of, you know, playing in the final group on Sunday.
Victor Hovland also still seeking that security. It's crazy because he's been in all the majors that I forget that he still has some work to do to be able to get a guarantee PGA Tour card even for next year.
Yeah, and he's in those Korn Ferry finals too. And I mean, again, you know, anything can happen, but you've got to think that he would be a pretty fairly safe bet, as safe a bet as you can get in golf to get his tour card through those.
And that has been our perfect finish brought to you by Amstel Light. It's the perfect choice, perfect finish, perfect balance at the end of any round of golf with your friends. So since you were dialed in to the 3M Open, are you also in on like the Irish Open, Scottish Open, this run up on the European Tour into the Open Championship?
Definitely. I love it. I love it. The shotgun start with Andy and Brendan over there. They call it coffee golf just because it is like, it's a perfect thing to, you know, you just wake up and, you know, on the East Coast, probably by 8 a.m. it comes on and, you know, you just kind of maybe are slow getting out of bed, getting your day started on the weekend, grab a cup of coffee and just watch some links golf and just a type of golf you don't see all year. So it's definitely a cool time of year for that.
Who's right now on your radar, like as you're starting to think about the Open and as you're starting to think, whether it's like angles that are cool stories or even players that you're really starting to consider, what's buzzing on your radar right now for Royal Portrush?
I do share it with Kyle, kind of the view that it was kind of funny that guys were like, oh, John Rahm, you know, established himself as open favorite with that Irish Open win. And he's right. He's like, guys, he's been playing great all year. He finished third at the U.S. Open. He's got 10 top 10s and 15 starts this year. It's his second Irish Open win. And so I think that he's someone that you have to look at. And then even, you know, you look at Rory, and there's going to be a lot of talk around Rory because it is Royal Portrush, and he's from Northern Ireland. And, It's a place where when he was 16 years old, he shot this 61 in the North of Ireland Amateur Championship, which sounds kind of like an obscure event, but that 61 made big headlines over there and really was kind of this round where people were like, this kid's the real deal. There'd been rumblings and, you know, Rory had been on TV as a little kid and, you know, chipping balls into washing machines. And, you know, he was kind of their phenom, but you don't know what that looks like on a grander stage. Is he just going to be a good European player? You know, maybe he gets onto the European tour early. But when he shot that 61, Royal Portrush is so hard that people really were like, that's incredible. I mean, for a long time, Padraig Harrington had that course record, and it was 65. And so 61 was like basically unfathomable. He shot 28 on the back nine. And so it's a round that was very important in Rory's career. He'll get asked about it a bunch this week. But also, I was crunching the numbers. Rory's average finish in the Open since 2014 is third. He won in 2014. He missed 2015. He's got a second, a fourth, and a fifth also in there. So, you know, I think we think of Rory as kind of, you know, oh, he does best when the majors are soft and that kind of thing. But, I mean, his links play is something else. I mean, he's been in contention basically every time he's played for the last, you know, four Opens that he's been in.
I challenge, and I would have to take a bit by bit, but I challenge that, like, Rory doesn't necessarily hasn't had necessarily the contentions at the Open Championships, but he has had like the survival skills, right? Like, doesn't it seem that at the Open, Rory's just the one who doesn't completely lose his mind or like just like absolutely eject? Like, he's actually one who can sit in there and have, like, he might have 2 to 3 bogeys in a row, but he's able to keep it together and able to find some places to make scores, find some holes where he's going to be able to take advantage with some of his distance. And I like Rory has high finishes on the leaderboard, but that doesn't always mean that he was like in the final group and contending at the Open.
Sure. And I think, you know, people kind of knock that as kind of a backdoor finish or whatnot, but there's something to be said for just kind of consistently moving up the board while other people might have gotten off to a hot start and then faded back. And I understand why people think one is better than the other. You know, you're in the final group, you're in the TV time, you've got the late tee times, but I mean, they all count the same Thursday through Sunday. And obviously, you know, you think what could have been if he had just shot a couple shots lower on Thursday, but at the same time, there's, you know, shooting four consecutive 69s is the same as shooting, you know, 67, 67, and then backing it up with a couple 73s or a couple 71s. So I think that gets maybe a little bit more of a knock than it should. And he was in there in Carnoustie. It was kind of a late last-minute gasp, but he made that late eagle to really kind of put himself in the mix. And at Carnoustie, with the way the final three holes play, really anything can happen. But, you know, Francesco just closed it out.
Right. And, like, look, I can I believe that, you know, high finishes deserve great attention. And I think that the only place where, if you're bringing that up for Rory as a negative, as part of your like pre-Open commentary, it should only be in the discussion of who you want to win. I think that everything that he's shown suggests that in our little CBS Sports expert picks that he is a top 10 lock. He's my pick for top 10 lock. You're just suggesting that, like many other times in the Open and other major championships, while he's a lock for the top 10 because he's just one of the best players on the planet, I'm just not going to pick McIlroy as the one to actually finish, because to me, that just, if we get Rory at Portrush, after getting Tiger at Augusta, I wonder if it's just going to be, I don't know. It's funny to look back at the whole major championship. I just think that Rory at Portrush would be a little bit too much, right? Like, wouldn't that just be a little bit too much of storybook kind of breakthrough moment? I think that we used up all of our storybook points at Augusta. That's what I'm saying.
Chip, why are you hating everyone's dreams?
I just...
Let yourself dream a little, Chip.
Well, right now my pick is Jon Rahm. And it's not just because of the headlines.
Rory at Portrush would be nuts. And, you know, this Open has sold out. People are very excited for it. I mean, it's the first time it's been in Northern Ireland or Ireland since 1951. And that was the first Open to ever be held outside of England or Scotland. And a sellout at the Open is big crowds because they can sell a lot of tickets because there's so much room around links courses. And so, you know, you're going to have big crowds excited for the Open, a lot of enthusiasm, and then to have Rory playing late. It would be nuts. you know, let's go Rory Tiger duel. Let's do it.
I would love it. Absolutely love it. He is Sean Martin. You can follow him on Twitter at PGA Tour S Martin. You can follow me at Chip_Patterson. Sean, this has been delightful. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chip.